afternoon. It's Tuesday, April 7th, 2020, and the time is 2 o'clock. We're calling to order the Montgomery County Hospital District and the Montgomery County Public Health District special meeting. It's good to see you guys again, or be with you guys again. Sorry that I missed Friday. I was out with a stomach bug. But I've been double tested, and I'm COVID-19 negative, so that's good news. We received some questions from some of our board members, and we also received some questions from the general public people. So before we start, I wanted to talk real briefly about exactly what it is the hospital district and the public health district do. The hospital district was started in 1977, and the purpose of the hospital district was to provide additional funding for needy residents of the county. Today, we own no hospital. The hospital was sold in the early 90s. We don't control any hospitals. We coordinate care with hospitals through our EMS program and through our healthcare assistance program. So what we do today is we pay for some of the indigent residents of Montgomery County, their healthcare and their hospital bills. We provide the county EMS services, the 911 services for the entire county. And we deal with hospitals through outcome measures for our 911 program. And we also deal with hospitals by doing case management and paying for some indigent care. So that's the mission of the hospital district. In 2010, the county asked the hospital district to take over the management of the public, the Montgomery County Public Health District. We did that, and the Montgomery County Hospital District manages the Public Health District. The thing that the Public Health District does in normal times is we provide vaccinations for indigent people in the county, primarily indigent children. We provide tuberculosis testing and treatment, sexual transmitted disease testing and treatment. We also provide emergency preparedness. So if we have hurricanes, floods, that sort of thing, and we have to set up shelters, we take care of the shelters to make sure that they're safe and that disease is not going to happen there. And then finally, one big job that we do is we do epidemiology for the county. We track and trend all the diseases that come through the county, see where they came from, where they went to. For that, we have two epidemiologists to do that tracking and trending. So now that COVID-19 is such a big deal, that's obviously become a much, much bigger program. So in normal times, our public health district is very small. We received $481,000 in grant funding from the state to provide the public health district program. We also received $90,000 from the county. And that's the primary source of funding for the public health district. So as you can see, with a small program like that, expanding as we've had to expand now has been difficult. So we've been very helpful. We've been very fortunate to have the hospital district help us working together so that we can track and trend and help, hopefully keep up with what's going on with COVID-19 as best we can. In 2012, we were able to start getting a special federal fund that was funded partially by the hospital district. It's a tough fund every year for the public health district, so we get an extra $500 million for that. So this is a relatively small venture at this point in time. There's been some questions about our ability to get testing kits. I wanted to go over that just briefly. First of all, the state was supposed to have a testing kit stockpile, so we ordered testing kits from the state. And let's just talk about what happened there.
We set up what is called a STAR request, which is the official way to request tests at the beginning of March. We received back, we requested a ballot, we received back that we would get an allocation of 15, which was quickly erased, and we received 6 tests. We have not received any more than that through the state at this time. And in fact, Derek Hess at the OEM let us know, as he was requesting at the same time, that he received back the answer that our tests were on back order and August was our best hope to receive these tests from the state. So in any chance that we've been able to get it because we went out before ourselves and changed them at market value.
So, after that, well, Randy, they're doing testing in Harris County. Why aren't we doing testing in Montgomery County? Harris County has received tests through the state, and the Harris County Health Department was much bigger than our health department. And what we found out is that we haven't been able to get tests because in normal times we don't order these tests. And so our suppliers said they're sending tests first to the organization that order tests on a regular basis. The state also sent more tests for the entire area to Harris County. So right now, if you want to drive through three tests, the best thing to do is to go to Harris County. But we've been told by the Office of Emergency Management that the state doesn't have any more tests, and they're going to be drying up the tests in Harris County as well, and we've never had any here. So that drive-through process is probably not going to last much longer. From a testing standpoint, on March the 16th, we ordered tests from McKesson Labs. At that time, we ordered 720 tests, and they told us that they couldn't ship the tests to us because we had no prior history of ordering these types of tests. So then we turned around and we went with Thermo Fisher Scientific from Rummel. We ordered 720 tests from them. The issue there is that they were all on back order. And they let us know whenever the back order was taken care of, and we haven't been able to get any tests from them as well. We went back to McKesson after that on March 27th. We ordered 600 more tests to be drop-shipped, and we do not have an estimated time of arrival from McKesson. They're just telling us they're on back order, and they don't know when they will be able to get the tests to us. Dr. Dixon, through a colleague, in South Florida, was able to find some tests in China, and the colleague in Florida helped us order 500 tests from China. Those tests are blood tests. They're supposed to be coming in sometime between last Friday and the middle of next week. But we called the guy who's doing the ordering, and he said that he's on back order, and he would update us on Thursday as to when we could expect to get those tests. Then we also called Henry Schein, which is one of our neighbors, for a rapid test. And they said that we need to be CLIA waived, and we're not CLIA waived to be able to get tests from them. So we have been able to procure 50 blood tests today so that we can test our medics who have been in quarantine. And Dr. Dixon is now doing some double testing program to make sure that these tests are valid and he feels comfortable with it. So he's in the process of checking the validity of these tests at this point. The next thing I'd like to do is for the board members of the hospital district. So we are going to have an online meeting with all of our managers tomorrow at 11 o'clock. And basically, we're going to go through an update as to what all we've been doing basically since most of our non-EMS people are working from home. We're going to give them an update of what's been going on here, what our process has been, and what they can expect. We expect that they probably will continue to work from home for the most part until at least the end of May at this point in time. We still think that there's a good possibility that we're going to be extremely busy toward the end of this month and clearing out through the month of May. We received some questions from some of our board members and from several people who are online now. So I'll read through the questions and then we can answer them. First, I have some questions from Mrs. Watson, one of our board members in the hospital district. And she says, I have a question that you probably do not know the answer to, but I have not seen it discussed anywhere. They are saying that between 20 and 50 of people who get this test don't show any symptoms. Is that the same rate applicable to the elderly, or is it just an overall rate that varies every day? I think what she's saying is that she's heard that somewhere between 25% and 50% of the population who are tested don't have any signs or symptoms of the COVID-19 virus. Dr. Dixon?
That's tough. I don't think anyone, Ms. Watley, actually knows the number. We do know that you could be a subclinical case or an asymptomatic carrier. That percentage is not quite clear. Really, the literature on this, and I've been reading lots and lots of testing literature and things, has really come out of China. There's some data that came out of Italy that helped us with our projections. But the honest answer is we don't know. We do know it exists. I don't know if it's more prominent in one subset of population, i.e. people banter around that kids are more likely to be asymptomatic carriers versus adults. I don't know if there's any science to really support that. That's kind of expert conjecture for now. So can't give you a percentage. We do know it exists. We've seen it here already.
Okay, the next question is, are there facilities actually testing, and are they reporting tests?
Yes, there are facilities testing in Montgomery County. The call center that's upstairs has a routine of calling a call list every day to see who's testing and who's not. Right now, our best guess based on what the call center is doing is we have 23 locations in the county that are testing. That includes our major hospitals, as well as freestanding urgent cares and primary care.
Now, testing for free is another question. All these test sites that we're aware of are charging for their tests. Our billing insurance, which is fair, they're having to pay a market rate for the test anywhere from $30 to $60 per test. They're also having to have a professional charge to read the test and review the test results. So they're recouping their costs for the drive through clinic. The only place that we know of where testing is going on at this time for free would be going down to Harris County. And those tests are limited. You have to fill out a survey first, and you actually have to warrant getting the test before you're actually able to get it. Any other comments? Are the test results from private facilities included in the daily report?
The test results from private facilities are included in the report. You're getting results back from the Houston lab as well as the private lab. What we don't have to get back, which is not required, is the negative test. So there's no way of knowing how many total tests have been done. All we know is the results we get back. So, as of today, we have received 677 negative test results back. We have 82 pending. We have 197 positives as of noon today. I'll be sending the rest up soon. We have 4 deceased. 3 of those died here in Montgomery County. The 4th is a Montgomery County resident who went to his family's house out of state to have an elective surgery done. Days after that surgery, he tested positive for COVID and passed away in that state at that hospital. And we have 33 that have recovered.
Now, it will be said, I can say that it's required that the positives are reported to us, but there's been some glitches with reporting, and there may be some facilities who are not reporting. And at this point in time, there's no way for us to be able to keep up with track all the facilities and that they are actually reporting all the positive cases.
And they have an option to report to their local health district or to the division. And in that case, we get the results back from the state rather than us sending them to the state. So there's a lot of moving parts for them when the lab reports back to the physician's office. When the physician's office gets them and reads them, they're off, we give them the nudge. And then when they call the person to tell them they're positive, and then they send them to the check. For example, one test, in the last week, which is the date in this, we received it as if the patient 12 days after they were known to be positive and they had already met all the criteria for being recovered. So there is a delay in lab testing and reporting.
So
So are test results from private facilities included in that report?
Yes.
Are they reporting total test numbers or just positive?
They report both. They report the positives and some negatives. Sometimes they can pull back, sometimes they sort out the positives. So we get negatives back on the list that we've given as PUI, a person of interest, and given the number of reasons that you select, we get both of those results back, positive or negative. But all the others only have to report the positives, although sometimes they can report negatives as well.
So we don't really have a total whole number of tests that have been given in the county. There's no real way to track that. So the next question is how many total tests have been given? As I say, it's unknown.
We don't really have a report.
And is there a graph available so that we can see an increase in a more visual report?
We do have a graph. We have a number of different things. Graph, male, female, graph by age group, and positives on a trend started with zero, and now we're at 197. We have that graph.
So we can put that graph on our phone. So the Woodlands Online is posting a map of positive cases. How accurate is it?
I reviewed the map before the meeting, and it looks like they're taking the zip code from the public health data and then putting it into a third-party data service and they're populating on the map. It's only as good as what they're putting in. We have no way to verify how accurate the red dot is on the map. So because it's a third party, it's not our map.
I think it's fairly accurate.
It's fairly accurate based on just the glance. But we are working with OEM and the GIS and the county by giving a narrower address to them, well, not a specific address. And we are working to have a map that will be more specific as a heat map.
Okay, I also received some questions from the citizen Jack Garrett. He says 18 patients. Quarantined to one hospital. Why, with so few patients, are we hearing about supply shortage?
Okay. So the 18 patients are not in one hospital. They're spread among hospitals. And those are 18 known cases in Montgomery County, residents of Montgomery County. That does not give us the total number that are in the hospital.
The hospitals may have patients that have COVID who are coming from other counties, surrounding counties as well. We do have calls with hospitals twice weekly. We're keeping up with hospital coordination through the Office of Emergency Management. And I can tell you, all the hospitals are reporting is that their emergency room traffic is down because people are afraid to go to the hospital. The hospital volume is down because they're not doing elective cases by state order. And they do have quite a few patients in their hospitals who are respiratory, and the different hospital systems are managing their COVID patients differently. Some of the hospital systems are cohorting all their COVID patients into one hospital in the region. When that hospital fills, they'll work on Plan B and Plan C. We've also been working with them to see what their intensive care capacity is, what their ventilator capacity is, and what their surge potential is. So, we're working on a weekly basis, and that's changing on a weekly basis. But now there's plenty of capacity in Montgomery County with the six Montgomery County hospitals. And they're all fortunate because they all have, they're part of a bigger system, so that they can cohort and move patients accordingly. With so few patients, why are we hearing about supply shortage? Well, I think if you look at the national news, we're hearing about supply shortages because supply shortages are what happens when the COVID-19 virus really starts to hit full feet. And I'll digress for just a minute, and let's talk about what our models have been and where we think we are. And
I can talk about the supply chain. It's a global supply chain, and if you turn on any, which whichever news channel you like is about right now. Almost 2 million cases, 1.8 million cases in the world, and it being a global supply chain, that's one of the big reasons that we like every other agency, has struggled to stay ahead of the curve, making sure we get proper supplies in, because we're competing against all those other areas of the world that are hit by this thing. As far as the protections, Chief, you want to talk about the curve?
Yeah.
We use a couple different models that essentially match the data that Chief's about to give.
The initial models that we looked at probably 2 weeks ago had about mid-April as our peak. But now, as Texas, especially the southeast part of Texas,
it really didn't have mid-April as our peak. It had mid-April at the time that we really began to ramp up.
As more cases and more data becomes available for southeast Texas, it looks more like first, second week of May than it did mid-April. And one of the counties that we've been tracking was Fort Bend County. And we do have information that Fort Bend County, their hospitals have really become quite busy this week. And we've been tracking about a week to 10 days behind Fort Bend County. And it's a county that's similar in size to ours. And so we're thinking that our big increase is going to be, as we predicted, probably
in the middle of the month. One of the things that we try to use to make those predictions is obviously regional numbers and models compared to Montgomery County cases. But really, hot spots is what we try to monitor, the conservatory being one. And as more positive cases happen at locations like that, it helps us determine high-risk cases, comorbidities, and versus low-risk cases. So that's one way we can help models.
And hopefully we've overshot the mark. It's better to be overprepared than underprepared. Next question is, was the hospital district limiting supplies before the pandemic? No, we were using our supplies. I would like to think that we were using our supplies wisely, but before the pandemic, we were taking care of patients with our 911 system and with our public health system and with our indigent care system, I think in a very good way.
And the way not only we but hospitals operate now with their rapid ability prior to the pandemic to get supplies within 24 hours, we keep a lot of stock on hand to be responsible and we order because you can get them next day. That has drastically changed with this, and that's why people don't have the large stockpiles. They have car levels that they replace on a daily basis. And with that chain cut off, that's why you're hearing so much about these shortages, because that you could get it tomorrow turned into you can get it in 3 weeks. And so you had to stretch that car level that you had on hand to meet the needs of 3 weeks versus 3 days.
Okay. And the last question that we have for Mr. Garrett is, has being a business become more important than proper and efficient health care? Your hospital staff say yes. I guess that's really not a question. I guess that's a statement. Once again, we don't have a hospital. We take care of indigent patients, the county 911 system, and public health.
If I take care of indigent patients, we contract with the hospital to provide the services.
Next questions are from Mr. Chris Walter. Just let me start by thanking you for being our warriors on the front line of this crisis. I pray that all of our doctors, nurses, and support staff are blessed with good health throughout this ordeal, as do I. His first question was, what medications are currently being used in Montgomery County hospitals to treat COVID-19?
Yes, sir. So right now there's a variety of medications. I would say that there's lots of information in the lay press about hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil, about different antibiotics, specifically azithromycin and some antiviral medications. Understand that all these are investigational. They are not FDA approved for this indication. They're being used off-label to try to help these patients, and investigations are underway looking specifically at the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil and these different antibiotic regimens. But as of yet, there's really no peer-reviewed evidence that says, I'm going to take this medication and escape a more severe course, or if I have a severe course, I'm more likely to survive if I take this medication. It's just simply too early. There are some early promising results with some of them, and so the jury's still out. I think we have to wait on the science. Lots of things, when you're desperate, in desperate situations, lots of things look good. Some patients get better, and it may have been the medication. It may have been just because something with that patient. This disease has affected different subgroups of people, like we talked about, in more harshly, which is our elderly population, and people with known comorbid conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, things like that. And but we have seen it hit a few young people, and it's not quite clear why it hits some, affects some so severely and not others. But those are questions we will answer probably in the coming years as we look back at our data here.
Because we're not anywhere near having all of our hospital beds being used, do you foresee the governor lifting the prohibition on elective surgery soon? In parentheses, specifically orthopedic and specialized locations like St. Luke's Lakeside. I'm taking a guess here, but my answer would be no, I do not see that happening. The hospitals have been emptied out because of the concern for the potential surge. We've seen what's happened in Louisiana. Dallas is becoming busy. We know what's going on in New York and New Jersey and Michigan. And like I say, our numbers are tracking that we're 10 days to 2 weeks behind the ramp up. And so I think until probably at least the end of April to mid-May, we're going to hold hospital bed capacity until we start to see the numbers of admissions in the hospital drop. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think they're in a position to. I think it's kind of all hands on deck. I think I said in the last meeting, I've said a bunch of times in other venues, I think we have to prepare like we're not going to get a slice out, a cut off of this deal, and that's kind of how we prepare. We foresee that we're going to have similar percentage numbers as other big metropolitan areas in the far in the country, and that's what we're preparing for. So I think our sole focus these last few weeks has been taking care of our patients and taking care of our people who take care of our patients for the COVID-19, and we see the same in our hospital systems. I don't foresee them going back to regular operations in the foreseeable future.
Okay, my next question is, local hospitals are sterilizing and recycling N95 masks. What is the hospital district's stance on this? I think that makes a lot of sense. If they have found a system that they think works and they've tested their system, I think that we need to stretch all of our PPE as far as we possibly can, because we don't know how much more we're going to be able to get. Supply chain is broken. The demand for PPE is incredible. We're doing exactly the same thing. Currently, we have plenty of N95 masks, but we're concerned that we're going to run out of N95 masks in the weeks to come. So as a result, we also have a sterilization system that we've been using. We're not actually using repurposed masks yet, but we've tested our sterilization process, and it works very well. So we're also beginning to sterilize the 95 masks so that we can stockpile the future. Okay, that's all the questions that I have that were sent in before time.
Answer some questions.
Okay. You want to read it out loud? or 10 acres.
Yeah, they can see
the okay. Anybody that's done a call at the bottom of the screen? Why don't you just read through the material?
Okay. There's a question that says, Randy and Melissa, are you requiring both diagnostic and rapid results or just diagnostic? Thanks, I asked for clarification and she just responded and said, swap diagnostics versus rapid antibody. What's our philosophy?
Dr. Dixon has a philosophy on that. He's building it as we speak.
Yeah, so, yeah, the tests are, the rapid antibody tests are typically a test that's better after the first 7 days from the onset of illness. So if you look at a normal COVID-19, a mild case would be about 2 weeks from the time you come in contact with it until the time you're fully recovered. We start with a pretty simple scenario like that. That's kind of the run-of-the-mill case. That's over 80% of the cases have that course. In the first week of that, the PCR test is the nasal swab test where we look for the DNA or the RNA or the genomic signal from specific to the COVID-19 in the cells of the posterior nose. That's better in the first week. And the blood test that looks for the body's response, it doesn't check for the virus, it checks for the body's specific response to that in things called the IgM antibody and the IgG antibody are better in the second week of the illness. So depending on the patient, our goal right now, as Randy said earlier, is likely to use both tests initially for patients. Why? Because I want to try to confirm that these tests are all very, very new. They're coming from probably, I don't know, the manufacturers, there's probably 30, 40 major manufacturers in the world in these things. And they all have different sensitivity or accuracy data. And so I want to make sure that we check these against some of our known positive cases so we can internally validate the tests that we're purchasing. So that's one thing. And the other would be, it depends on, so initial patients, I would do both. I would do the nasal swab and I would do the rapid test. And then the rapid test, I'm going to do on some of our known positives. I have them coming in, and I'm going to do them to validate internally our the test we purchased, the antibody test we purchased.
Thanks. That's cool. Next question, I'm going to lump the two together. Do the models account for lack of test kit? And do you feel like the peak number projection will be similar to what we originally projected? So my response to that was it doesn't take into consideration the lack of tests. Or at the same time, it's hard to say what our original projection versus now is because it's a math problem versus science. So we're working off math, and then it's hard to take into consideration human behavior, social distancing, the stay-at-home order, number of tests. And just one example of that is on several Sundays in a row, we've gotten one or two positive cases reported, which impacts the model to make it almost flat. And then today we get 30 plus positive reported, which puts the trend back up. So there's a whole math component that makes the model look very difficult as an accounting. Yeah, the thing that's been a problem here is we weren't able to do massive testing early on so that we could get some kind of benchmark of what has been happening. So what had to happen in the hospitals and all throughout the county is that patients had to have signs and symptoms, and doctors would look at signs and symptoms, and then based on the signs and symptoms, they may or may not be able to give the patient a chest x-ray or a CT and say, yes, you've got bad lungs, you probably have a bad case of COVID-19. Go home and quarantine. If you feel worse, come back to the hospital or call 911, and we'll come in and we'll take care of you in the hospital. That process has had to happen. So we really don't have an idea of how endemic COVID-19 is throughout the community. We don't think our community is any different than any other. Social distancing makes a huge difference. But we think that it's very endemic throughout the community. We think a lot of people that have COVID-19 probably may be asymptomatic. As Georgia has said, maybe up to 25% of the patients walking around may be asymptomatic. what we do know is that, you know, we need to be prepared over the next 2 to 3 weeks. You know, for the worst case scenario, and barring that, then I think we'll get better direction from the state, the local authorities, as well as the national authorities. I want to talk about a couple of things. Is that the last question? We're running a little bit over, but I wanted to talk about a couple of things. I want to talk about how proud I am of the public health people. They worked night and day early on, trying to track and trend what was going on in the county. They're still working 7 days a week. They're now working 12-hour shifts every other day. James and Doc have been key to this organization. James set up this center early on, and he's worked with his chief team and with his support staff. They've done a fantastic job of changing the way we do medicine in EMS to best take care of patients and to best take care of our medics who take care of the patients. So they've changed completely the way medics were seeing patients early on. They added PPE for everybody to keep our medics safe. There's a problem when we see patients that need treatment. The more treatments we do back then, the more dangerous if they have COVID-19 it is to have the COVID-19 paralyzed. So the doctors have done a fantastic job of reducing the amount of very dangerous procedures that we're doing while still keeping the patients safe. And they've changed their practice 3 or 4 times to make sure that they're combining the safety of the patient with the safety of the staff. And I think it's been a tremendous job. Doc number 2 has been here 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and I don't think James has gone home, but the whole thing happened. So I've been, you have a tremendous group of people, and they're doing an excellent job. And I also want to commend all of our support staff. They've been phenomenal. Our people working from home, their productivity has been outstanding. It's an honor to work for both facilities.
Mr. Chan, thanks for
all
you did a great job. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chan.
I just want to assure everybody that even though public HCAP, our health care assistance program, are not here working on site, they are working, they are processing cases, they do have applications coming in, they are renewing people that are on the HCAP program, they continue to run their program as if they were here. So to let you know that, and Addie, who is always a superstar, has also come in to help public health, as that was where she began her career, that's her master's degree, and she continues to help us with public health, as does other workers that are working at home by processing things that allow public health to focus on just those positive and negative tests and those people that we're monitoring. So, there are a lot of people behind the scenes that are working very hard to ensure that we're doing as well as we're doing, and they all deserve applause.
Absolutely. One last thing, public health, Dr. Dixon, and his testing program, we're working in concert with Lone Star health practice so that if we can get some testing, that we can help them with testing program over there, and we can coordinate care with Lone Star. The last thing that Dr. Dixon, Melissa, and Chief Campbell have been working on is a program so that we can stand down patients in the community in the event that we do have a rapid onslaught of COVID-19 patients. And Chief Campbell has set up a squad so that the squad can go and take care of patients who potentially could be refusal, evaluate them. We have a call center where we're screening patients, and Dr. Dixon is working on an algorithm so that if we have a patient who is sick, we have a way to follow up the patient at home and take care of them at home as long as that's efficacious. If the patient becomes sicker, obviously we can get them to the hospital. But I think that that's the way community paramedicine, our Medicare EC3 program, and 911 systems are going to work in the future, and I think this is really just pushing us to that mode quicker than we've done anyway. doctors, the team has done an outstanding job of standing up that program so that we'll be ready to take care of the patient in the event that we're overwhelmed with this patient for the next 2 to 4 weeks. Any other comments, please?
Mr. Beckman?
Yes.
Said more than 740 at one Detroit hospital was tested positive for coronavirus. Let's hope that that's the big one.
Well, we're keeping a close eye on it, and absolutely, let's do hope that does not. We're being very safe. Well, thank you so much. We're going to have to go because we've got a hospital call, and I've got to read one last thing here. First of all, there will not be a meeting on Friday, April 10th. We'll postpone our next meeting until next Tuesday, April 14th. We're adjourned, and the time is 3:40. Thank you.